You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
In America, we believe in a future that is better than today. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has been working hard for their clients' futures, never taking a bailout, helping generations achieve dreams, buy homes, put their kids through college, retire how they want to. Today, Pat and Heidi and Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you feel more confident about your financial future. Put the strength of a global financial leader to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your dreams and goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated. Member FINRA and SIPC.
Well, good afternoon. It's Friday the 13th, February 13th, Friday. I guess some people are hiding under their sofas and others are braving the weather. Actually, I wish I was bringing you the weather from Arizona. I'm Pat Smits. I'm your host for It's the Law. And before we start, we're going to talk about the weather. Unfortunately, I can't bring you the weather from Arizona as local weather. I am just back from Arizona, and believe me, I understand why people have winter homes in Arizona. It's beautiful, swimming, 80 degrees, just a great climate. But what's happening in New Jersey? Well, today is a beautiful sunny day, and unlike other people, I don't mind the cold as long as it's sunny and bright. So what's going to happen over the weekend? I think we do need to look at that, however. And in fact, we're going to have a hazardous conditions predicted, and that is because they're going to be high winds, and we need to have, it is in fact called a high wind watch, not yet a warning, but a high wind watch. And that's going to be in effect from tomorrow at about 10 p.m. until Sunday at 2 p.m. So really be careful because these high winds can cause, as we know, a great deal of damage and a lot of trees blowing over depending on which way the wind is blowing. So today, current conditions, high of about 21 degrees Fahrenheit, but it's been a beautiful sunny day. Tonight, we have increasing cloudiness, and tomorrow there is an 80% chance of what they call heavy snow. I've never quite believed that heavy snow in this area is really heavy snow, although we did not have the heavy snow that they had in Boston. But it could be heavy snow tonight, and then heavy snow tomorrow and into Saturday night. And again, blowing snow on Sunday, about a 20% chance of snow on Sunday. Sunday night should be mostly clear. And on Washington's birthday, hopefully you'll have off. It'll be sunny with a high of only about 16 degrees. But in fact, it should be a nice, sunny, bright day. Good day to get out, play in the snow. And as I said, the snow on Saturday, they expect it mainly after 1 p.m., and then snow likely with, as we said before, widespread blowing snow after 7 p.m. And there could be some drifts. You have to be careful about that. I remember once in the Midwest driving down a road and driving right into a snowbank that was on the road because it was impossible to see. So please, everybody, be careful out there if you're driving in blowing snow because it's very deceptive. So that's the weather, and we'll be back after just a short brief message, and we'll talk about legal news.
I'm Dave Lang with Insight Financial Services and a proud member of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Even in this difficult economy, our family of companies, including Insight Financial, Premier College Funding, and the Insight Tax and Accounting Group, have grown and prospered. I believe that our participation in all of the opportunities that the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce offers to its members strongly contributes to our success.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to HunterdonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Well, we're back. I'm your host, Pat Smits, and we're talking about what's happening in the legal news lately. And in fact, that's what I'm going to talk about today. I do not have a guest, so we're going to talk about some of the things that are coming out from legally, from cases, and some of the news briefs and headlines. And one of the things that might be of interest to people as far as Facebook, and we have to be careful if we're lawyers, we have to be careful whether or not and who we friend, because two New Jersey lawyers are charged with ethics violations for their use of Facebook in defending a personal injury suit, and they lost their bid to derail the disciplinary action against them. So the on February 3rd, an appeals panel in Robertelli versus New Jersey Office of Attorney Ethics upheld the dismissal of the lawyers' declaratory judgment action against the state ethics authorities for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. Now, I know that's a lot of gobbledygook, legal gobbledygook, but the appellate court in New Jersey said that only the New Jersey Supreme Court can decide whether an ethics case was properly brought. So I'm sure we'll hear more about that. This was, as I said, the two plaintiffs filed the complaint against the Attorney Office of Attorney Ethics and its director. They wanted the court to say that the Office of Attorney Ethics lacked jurisdiction or authority to investigate and prosecute a grievance against them, and an injunction prohibiting prosecution. In other words, they wanted to stop the investigation and prosecution. Now, what happened is the trial judge dismissed the complaint pursuant to one of the rules of court, stating that the court did not have subject matter jurisdiction. And that meant the trial court said that they did not have the right to hear the case. And the trial judge concluded the Supreme Court and ethics, office established pursuant to court rule, have exclusive jurisdiction. So excuse me, I did misspeak. It was not an appellate division. This was the trial judge who said that the only court with jurisdiction to stop or change the procedures would be the Supreme Court of New Jersey. What does this mean? Well, in New Jersey, we have an Office of Attorney Ethics, and we have ethical rules, rules that all attorneys have to comply with. And in fact, if the attorneys do not comply, someone can file a grievance. And if there is a grievance filed against an attorney, there is an investigation made. And depending on the conclusion of the investigation, the attorney, there are a number of things that the ethics can do. Most ethics cases are handled locally in the local jurisdiction. So, for example, in Hunterdon County, an ethics violation would initially go to the vicinage, which is Hunterdon, Somerset, and Warren, and the local ethics, the district ethics committee, does the investigation in most cases, although there are more and more investigations now done by the state attorney's office of ethics. Years ago, I was on the ethics committee in Morris County, and we did virtually all of the investigations, all of the prosecutions, and made all of the recommendations. And of course, it could go a step further, but that was done. Now, more and more of these are done by the attorneys, the general attorney ethics office. But in any event, this was apparently there. The lawyers were charged with ethic violations for the use of their Facebook, and they used Facebook to defend a personal injury suit. And so this is why this came about. And at this point, the trial judge made that decision, and then actually the appellate division, I misspoke again, the appellate division agreed with the trial judge's determination and affirmed. So that in this case, the only court that has jurisdiction to hear this type of matter would be the New Jersey Supreme Court. And there is also that case, in fact, was not reported. In other words, it was not approved for publication, but it is an unreported case, so anyone can download it from the judiciary website and read it. Now, there was an approved case, approved for publication earlier this month, a criminal case, and that held that the admission of the fresh complaint testimony bolstering the victim's credibility and exclusion of biased testimony constituted reversible error. And these errors denied the defendant a fair trial. So that trials in criminal matters, they're very strict in the rules and what has to be, what is allowed and what is not allowed. Unlike sometimes in the family law, we think that the judges let everything in because they feel that they can make a decision and exclude anything that's not relevant or not proper. So there's another lawsuit that is going to be of interest against some people, and there's a question about how far it will actually proceed. But there are a group of fathers who are suing the judges, family court judges, and they're suing in federal court. And now they're saying that it's not a misguided attempt by disgruntled litigants to overturn their child custody rulings. And the plaintiffs in the case say that they see it as an effort to end what they say is New Jersey court's systematic denial of due process rights to parents in custody disputes. But the little I've read about it doesn't look like most people are optimistic about their chances of success. But we'll certainly see that in the future. The other thing is that the New Jersey Supreme Court made a decision in a three-day battle over whether members of the public could be required to show government identification and undergo warrant checks to enter a courtroom. And this was a courtroom where an accused cop killer is on trial. And the reason that it no longer is in litigated, meaning whether or not the members of the public could be required to show government identification and undergo warrant checks, the Supreme Court dismissed it because they said the matter was moot. Well, what does that mean? Why would it be moot? Well, it was moot because the trial judge removed the challenge. remove the challenged security measures the day earlier. And therefore, the Supreme Court said there's nothing to rule on because whatever the people were complaining about, the trial judge was no longer doing, meaning that no longer were members of the public required to show government identification and or undergo warrant checks before they entered the courtroom. Now, there's another recent ruling by the Supreme Court in August versus that was approved, I believe, on the 11th of February, and that was approved for publication, as are all Supreme Court cases, and that had to do with sexual harassment. And so the plaintiffs, meaning the people who file cases based on sexual harassment, they have to, there's a higher standard if they hope to have their employers held vicariously liable for superiors' conduct. And this was in a 5-2 ruling in Aquas, A-Q-U-A-S, versus New Jersey. And the court held that it will allow employers to take advantage of the affirmative defenses established in the 1998 United States Supreme Court cases. And those cases established affirmative defenses that employers can use. So honestly, anyone who is an employer who has employees who are being supervised should take a look at these cases or should find out exactly what you as the employer need to do in order to protect yourself if a suit for sexual harassment is brought against one of the supervisors of an employee. So, for example, in a law office, a secretary might bring a sexual harassment suit against one of the attorneys who's an associate in the firm, but would also want to, if possible, hold the firm vicariously liable for the attorney's conduct. And the question is, what does the firm need to do in order to protect itself, or what does the business need to do to protect itself against that liability? Because in most cases, it is the company who has deep pockets, and most of those cases will probably go nowhere if it's just one employee claiming sexual harassment and compensation from another employee. So this is a very significant decision, because what we now know is that the standards that employers have to follow are the standards set by the United States Supreme Court in 1998. And those cases were Burlington Industries versus Elrath and Farragher versus Boca Raton. So again, if anyone has any questions about any of the cases that I talk about or needs information or the sites, certainly you can call me, call my office. I'm Pat Smits, S-M-I-T-S. I'm in the phone book. My office is in Clinton Township. And these are important precautions, meaning that every employer who has more than one employee or even with one employee, needs to take and make sure that there's certain standards that are required, that they deal with any complaints and document the fact that they are dealing with any complaints, and that they don't tolerate sexual harassment. The good old days are gone. I guess that's all we need to say about that. But it is true that no longer are things that were tolerated when I first started working tolerated today. In fact, things that we didn't even think were sexual harassment are. So what else is happening? Well, we always have, of course, our governor in the news. I found that out even when I was out in Arizona. Very interesting how he plays in some of the other states. But in any event, Governor Christie got something of a break recently when his communications office was able to send out a press release repeating a statement from the New Jersey U.S. Attorney, the spokesman for the U.S. Attorney, Paul Fishman, said that Christie is not under investigation for allegedly quashing a criminal complaint against political allies. So that was the latest from the U.S. Attorney's office. And, of course, we know that Governor Christie was the U.S. Attorney in New Jersey, and that's how he first became prominent in on the political scene, or on the state scene, I guess I should say. Now, what else is happening that kind of grabs headlines? Well, the next thing that kind of unusual, I was somewhat surprised and unusual when I read the way this was handled. But in any event, the way it was handled is a judge ruled that gay conversion therapy is consumer fraud. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, in New Jersey, we have a Consumer Fraud Act, and the judge ruled that it is a violation of the New Jersey Consumer Fraud Act to describe homosexuality as abnormal or a mental illness in advertising or to sell services to convert a person's sexual orientation. Now, this decision, believed to be the first of its kind in the United States, representing homosexuality as a disorder is a misrepresentation under the law, as is touting success statistics for such services, meaning conversion services, when there's no factual basis. And this Hudson County Superior Court Judge Peter Variso said in a case, Ferguson versus Jonah, just decided February 10th, and that would be an interesting case for some people. It's a consumer protection case, and of course, it was not published. Most trial court judges, the decisions are not published, even though they are newsworthy. But that doesn't mean that people can't read it, can't find it. You can find it at the judiciary website. And in this case, JONAH, J-O-N-A-H, is an acronym for Jews Offering New Alternatives for Healing. So in this case, the plaintiffs, Ferguson and others, filed an action against JONAH, which is JONAH is the Jews Offering New Alternatives for Healing, and also for others. And it alleged that JONAH is a nonprofit corporation dedicated to educating the Jewish community about the social, cultural, and emotional factors that lead to some same-sex attractions. And apparently the organization's clientele and counselors are not restricted to members of the Jewish faith. And they further, the plaintiffs further alleged that the organization uses counseling and other methods to assist individuals to purge unwanted same-sex attractions. And according to the plaintiffs, these business practices violate the New Jersey Consumer Fraud Act because they misrepresent that homosexuality is a mental illness or disorder, and that the organization's therapy program is effective in changing the sexual orientation of clients. Now, what happened here is the plaintiffs moved to bar the testimony, either in whole or in part, of six defense experts. And they were alleging that the threshold requirements for admissibility of expert testimony were not met because there is no reliable foundation for opinion testimony. And I guess I don't want to get off subject here, but in any trial, if it makes sense, expert testimony can be, an expert can testify. Now, most witnesses have to testify based on facts. However, expert witnesses who have expertise in an area can, in fact, offer their opinions. For example, in the family law, most of you know me, I'm a family lawyer. In the family law area, it's not unusual to have experts if custody and parenting time are at issue. And the expert is able to give opinions that someone else is not able to give. For example, a real estate expert can come in and give an opinion with respect to value on a house. It has to be an appraiser because they have the credentials and will be qualified as an expert. Now, someone's next door neighbor who has no credentials might come in and testify, but could only testify about facts, could not testify and give opinion testimony. So in this case, the defense had apparently had six experts that they wanted to call, and the plaintiff said that they were not met the requirements for admissibility under the evidence rules, and we have evidence rules here in New Jersey, and they have to qualify under the evidence rules, and they were not met in this case because there was no reliable foundation for the opinion testimony. Now, what happened is the motion was granted in part and denied in part, and so the plaintiff's motion to exclude certain people, including certain doctors and a rabbi, from testifying as experts was in fact granted. Now, they also had a motion to exclude another doctor from testifying as an expert, and that was granted only as to his testimony relating to the efficacy of sexual orientation change effects. Let me go back and say that. The efficacy of sexual orientation change efforts. The acronym for that is SOCE, and the plaintiff's credibility. So that was granted with respect to that, but it was not granted as to testimony relating to the lack of any mention of Jonah in plaintiff's treatment records. So apparently there's a narrow issue that he can testify. But this was a very interesting case for lawyers, but an interesting case as to how these plaintiffs pursued their claims, because they did it in an action under the Consumer Protection Act. So that goes to show how sometimes things can be expanded, and so they did not have to file under other, you know, claims, but rather could in fact use this Consumer Protection Act based on the fact that you know, you have to, if you are touting a product, you have to have some backup that it actually works if you're saying it works. So the magic formula, you know, it's not going to work if you tout that you have some magic formula and someone sues you, unless you can back up that, in fact, you have the magic formula and it does what you say it does, you would be found or could be found liable as violating the New Jersey consumer protection. So, interesting areas on how people can go about using certain legislation that they never would have expected to use for that particular benefit. But these people, the plaintiffs did, and in fact, basically what they're finding, and they based it on the fact that there's a lot of things that people say that, you know, just are not accurate. And if, in fact, we're going to have expert testimony, an expert has to have expertise in the area that they're testifying. So, for example, if these are psychologists, they could certainly testify about other aspects that they're qualified to testify. But if there's no evidence that, in fact, sexual orientation, in this case, sexual orientation therapy works, then they can't offer an opinion that it does. So we'll be back shortly, right after the short news break.
USA Radio News. I'm Kelly Sloan. A cybersecurity summit is being held today in California's Silicon Valley. In response to recent data breaches and cyber attacks, Apple CEO Tim Cook spoke.
By clicking on the wrong link or simply using your credit card, too many people have had their identity stolen, their finances threatened, and their lives turned upside down.
Millions of people have had their information breached in recent months due to attacks on Target, Home Depot, and Anthem, the insurance company. Anthony Early, the CEO of PG&E, says information sharing is the best weapon.
How many of the horror stories around security breakdowns involve siloing information, where one group doesn't know what the other is going on?
President Obama is at the summit to try and promote better information sharing between policymakers and innovators. This is USA Radio News.
Okay, so you own a business and cash is tight. So what do you do when you need funds? Go to a bank? Yeah, right. Waste a lot of time, send tons of paperwork, only to find out you need to personally guarantee your home, firstborn, and everything in between. Or you can just call the Business Funding Group. Yeah, it's fast and simple, with a 95% approval rate and cash for any business purpose. Equipment, inventory, expansion, cash flow, payroll. Grab a pen or put this number in your cell phone, but call 1-800-684-5434. That's 1-800-684-5434. When you call, you'll find out how to quickly and easily get the cash you need, up to $1 million with no collateral, no app or upfront fees, and your credit rating is not a factor. Plus, approvals in 12 hours and funds in 2 to 3 days. Call the Business Funding Group at 1-800-684-5434. That's 1-800-684-5434. This is by far the fastest and best business loan you can possibly get. Call 1-800-684-5434 now.
Well, we're back, and the program, It's the Law. I'm Pat Smits, your host, and talking about some of the legal news in the legal area this week. And one of the things that we often hear about, and I'm not going to give you my views because they're pretty conservative when it comes to this, but what a court has found the fact that a baby is born suffering from methadone withdrawal as a result of his mother's taking medicinal methadone 1 month before birth does not alone constitute abuse and neglect. And this was held by the Supreme Court unanimous decision on December 22nd in a case, New Jersey Division of Child Protection, which is the old DIFAS, and permanency versus YN. And they use initials, obviously, to protect the person. And the basis for that is that methadone is, in fact, legal, and that someone who is taking methadone, in fact, can't be prosecuted for neglect and abuse. Now, you know, there are different views as to what and when a fetus should be protected, so I guess we don't really have, this is not the program to get into that, but certainly a real concern, and the Division of Child Protection and Permanency does in fact get called whenever babies are born drug addicted. So absolutely, once the baby is born drug addicted, they have the not only the right but the duty to get involved. And the question has always been, should there be anything prior to the birth of a baby to protect the fetus that will then possibly and probably be born drug addicted. So this case is a little different because in this case, the methadone use, if that's all she did, and that's what the court said, and I think we have to look at those things, because if in fact she was taking methadone, that is not illegal unless she was getting it off the streets. So there was another case recently, and in some ways you had to feel sorry for the woman. But in this case, the woman appealed a family court's order, finding that the finding was that she had abused and/or neglected her infant daughter because that she had left the child in the homeless shelter where they had been residing while she went to the hospital, and she had not made appropriate arrangements with the staff. However, on appeal, the appellate division said that the record did not support a finding that her conduct was grossly or wantonly negligent, or that she had acted in a reckless disregard for the child's safety. And that's the standard by which her conduct should have been measured. And it was the trial judge in that case did not mention that standard. And the question, noting the record, suggested that the child was put at risk, but you know, there was nothing definitive, and that's why trial judges have to make findings of fact and conclusions of law, and that's why when there is an appeal, they will be reversed if they have not made adequate findings of fact and or conclusions of law, and so they have to base their decision, whatever it is, on you know, the facts that they find and the law that they apply to it. And that's why you find judges doing this. And most of the judges are really very aware of it. And of course, if the trial judge makes findings of fact and conclusions of law, the appellate division is not going to, most likely, they won't change the decision. In other words, they recognize that the trial judge is in the best position to hear the testimony, see the witnesses, see how they act, how they react, and so that the appellate division upholds decisions of trial judges as long as they're based on reasonable findings of fact and conclusions of law. Now, I talked earlier about the fact that some of what's been going on with Governor Christie, there was another recent headline where apparently an ex-prosecutor who claimed that the administration, Governor Christie's administration, quashed a criminal case to protect political allies and then fired him for objecting, said that he had been interviewed by federal investigators about those allegations. Now, this was a former state deputy attorney general and assistant Hunterdon County prosecutor. And he said he met with two men for a 75-minute interview, but only had the name of one of them, who identified himself as an investigator in the U.S. Department of Justice. But then, as I said, a few days later, you know, we were told that Christie is not under investigation as far as quashing a criminal case. So, you know, you hear both sides, and frankly, at least the U.S. Attorney's Office said that Christie is not under investigation. Now, of course, the Deputy Attorney General a week earlier said, in fact, he was. So, whatever. Now, the other thing that actually is, I believe, we should be supportive of the fact that the New Jersey Senate gave final legislative approval to a bill that would give more convicted drunken drivers the option of having the ignition interlock devices installed as in their cars, and that would be as an alternative to license revocation. You know, everybody, well, I'm not sure everybody has an opinion on this, but I'll give you mine. And that is, I've seen, for example, in California, the people who have been convicted of a DUI, DWI, they often are allowed to install an ignition interlock device. Now, why would I be for that rather than just simply suspending their license? Well, what California has recognized, obviously, is people need to drive. People need to drive to get to their work. And people drive when they're suspended. And, you know, often people drive on the suspended list. So rather than risk having somebody drive on the suspended list and then, you know, drive while intoxicated, the ignition interlock device really it protects from someone driving while they're intoxicated. I actually had an opportunity once to see it demonstrated in California, and the person they're very sophisticated, and the person first of all can't start the car without breathing into the system. And then periodically, while the car is being driven, the system, they have to blow into the system again. Now, can someone else sit there and blow into the system? I'm told not. I'm told that they are calibrated in such a way that it is the driver, who is the one who, and it's the driver who has been convicted of a DUI, that really has to blow into the device. But the other thing that makes sense is there are ways now, of course, to monitor where someone's driving. So with all the sophisticated technology today, it seems to be, at least in my view, better to, in fact, allow someone to drive, but make sure that they're not drinking. Now, the interlock device detects any drinking, not just over the limit, but any drinking or any level of alcohol. So that's why it really can be a great preventative. And, if someone's going to drink and stay at home, you know, that's fine. We just want to keep them off the highways. So in any event, the Senate passed the bill in a 29-4 vote. It had passed the Assembly last June in a 46-15 vote. So it now goes to Governor Christie for his action. Now, apparently, spokesman for the governors, the last I heard, had not responded to a request for comment. And I just hope this doesn't get, what do we want to say? Some things obviously are political beyond our state lines, and I hope that whether or not the governor signs the bill does not have anything to do with his presidential aspirations. I think he needs to think about New Jersey, think about what's to the best benefit of all the people in New Jersey, and driving under the influence, that's the goal, to stop it. In any way that we can stop it, I think it's been proven that simply license revocation is not necessarily going to stop it. Obviously, most people, I would say, although I don't have a statistic, most people, if their license is suspended, they're not going to drive. But also remember, in New Jersey, it's one of the toughest states as far as revocation, because there are no temporary license, there's no restricted license. It's total revocation for the amount of time. Now, other states, of course, make DUI criminal, where a DUI here is not criminal. And at some point, I'm not saying that there can't be criminal charges, but in general, simply getting a DUI is not a criminal offense. It's handled in the municipal court, and they're really restricted, though, as to what they can do. If in fact someone has a certain reading, there's going to be a revocation of license. And certainly with first-time offenders, let's hope there are some other alternatives, because we want to keep people. Frankly, we want to keep people from driving while intoxicated, but somehow the revocation alone doesn't seem to be able to do that. So I'll be right back after a couple announcements, and I also hope you stay tuned today to the sports guys will be coming up shortly.
Hi, I help students gain admission to colleges that are a great academic, social, and financial fit, where they will be successful, happy, and graduate on time with minimal debt. Email Diana at creativecollegeconsulting.com for a free consultation.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is a Forward New Jersey Coalition member.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down.
In August 2007, the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis collapsed, killing 13 people and injuring 145, including little children trapped on a school bus. The bridge had been rated structurally deficient, but those warnings were ignored.
Build it up with iron and steel, iron and steel.
In New Jersey, there are 479 bridges carrying over 8 million vehicles a day, rated worse.
Iron and steel will bend and bow, bend and bow, bend.
These aren't just bridges waiting to be fixed. They're tragedies waiting to happen. On June 30th, the state's transportation fund will be empty. We need to replenish it now, because next time, it could be your family on that bridge. Go to ForwardNewJersey.com and find out how you can help. Paid for by Forward New Jersey.
Well, London Bridge, actually the tragedy he talked about was in fact a true tragedy in Minnesota. But when they started talking about London Bridge, I was just in Lake Havasu, and of course they have, London Bridge is no longer in London, if you didn't know that. The London Bridge is in fact over the London Bridge that was in London over the Thames River is now in Lake Havasu, at least one of them, and it was apparently reconstructed block by block, and it's out there. Lake Havasu is a resort area in Arizona, bordering Arizona and California, very close to also very close to the southern part of Nevada. But there's a big lake, and there is the London Bridge. So anyway, getting back to what we're really talking about, and I didn't reiterate the weather a second time. Just know it's going to be cold, very windy, and we have predictions for more snow. So it may mean that it's now time to book a flight to Arizona and go see the London Bridge. So what else is happening? Well, there was a $7.3 million award in a case, and what's happened is the producer credited with launching Lady Gaga's career has lost his bid to trim the $7.3 million he was ordered to pay a talent scout for introducing him to the singer. So this is a case in New Jersey, and the judge denied the motion for what we call remittitor, and that means that to reduce the award. And this was a verdict in November of 2014, and the judge rejected the claim that the amount of the award to the plaintiff was not supported by evidence in the case. So the plaintiff, who was a talent scout, Wendy Starland, is, after attorney's fees and costs, is going to be awarded, or was awarded, $7.3 million, and the judge did not change that award. So the producer, who did and is credited for introducing and launching Lady Gaga's career, Bob Fusari, he has to pay Miss Starland $7.3 million. So I guess, you know, maybe he should have paid her before. are recognized. Now, obviously, it's complicated. There was a lot of evidence and as to the agreement, etc. And, you know, he tried to renege and didn't work. So kind of interesting. Certainly, it's a real windfall for someone who has, you know, had the contract in order to be paid for this. And obviously, that was what happened here. So what else is happening in the legal arena? A lot of things, obviously. But what one of the things that define the bipartisan will of both New Jersey and New York legislatures, Governor Christie, who is a Republican, and Governor Andrew Cuomo, who is a Democrat, joined forces on a holiday weekend and rejected the sweeping legislation aimed at reforming the scandal-plagued Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. And instead, what they did is they urged the legislature in both states to go back to the table, so to speak, and come up with some legislation mirroring the reform proposals released by two governors to the public. So the report was issued by the Special Panel on the Future of the Port Authority, and the governors created that in May following the realization that the abrupt September 2013 closure of local access lanes to the George Washington Bridge was likely politically motivated by two of Christie's closest allies. So the Port Authority reform legislation had been the product of the legislatures of both New York and New Jersey, and both of these legislatures are in fact required to work together to enact any changes to this massive bi-state agency. And New Jersey, you know, this agency is huge. And obviously, really, there is a lot of concern about political corruption. So in any event, we'll see what is happening, because the governors urged lawmakers to enact legislation based on the special panel's recommendation. So this happened early in January, so we'll see, you know, what in fact is going on as we look at this further. So what else is happening? Well, now there was a court directive that would have required lawyers and others to tote around signed agreements in order to use their smartphones, tablets, and other electronic devices in court. And that was put on an indefinite hold on January 21st. So this directive, which was to take effect this a couple weeks ago, actually last week, contains guidelines that treat lawyers the same as the media and other courthouse visitors in requiring a written agreement in order to use electronic devices in a courtroom. So what the administrative office said in making the determination in order to consider some concerns raised by the New Jersey Bar Association, because obviously it's not unusual for attorneys who are trying cases to take tablets or computers into the courtroom to, you know, assist them with the work. So this is, this is something that, came up, and, the courts took a look at our objections. Now, there was also a suit. This was a class action. You may have heard about it, against Riedel, claiming the company falsely advertised its football helmets as being able to reduce the incidence of concussions. And that was tossed out by a New Jersey federal judge, although the plaintiffs will have a chance to amend their claims. And this U.S. District Chief Judge Jerome Somondly of the District Court of New Jersey granted a motion to dismiss that litigation, although he did so without prejudice. So we'll, you know, have to see. And again, this is showing that companies that make claims have to be able to back them up. And as far as I said, this electronic policy, we'll be checking to see what happens as we go along, because it certainly, even in municipal courts, that would have to be some kind of I'm trying to figure out how to say this nicely, and I guess I can't. These are obviously electronic devices that allow someone to silently take notes and or describe and receive communications and information. So this has been the agreements would be on a prescribed form and reviewable annually, but that is something that attorneys are not going to be, and we're not happy with. So we'll follow up on that later. And in fact, I'm going to end the program now, play the news, and we'll be back after that with the sports guys.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they'll live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their own terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within your reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route
USA
31
Radio
North,
News.
Annandale,
I'm Kelly
New Jersey.
Sloan. A cybersecurity summit is being held today in California's Silicon Valley in response to recent data breaches and cyber attacks. Apple CEO Tim Cook spoke.
By clicking on the wrong link or simply using your credit card, too many people have had their identity stolen, their finances threatened, and their lives turned upside down.
Millions of people have had their information breached in recent months due to attacks on Target, Home Depot, and Anthem, the insurance company. Anthony Early, the CEO of PG&E, says information sharing is the best weapon.
How many of the horror stories around security breakdowns involve siloing information, where one group doesn't know what the other is going on?
President Obama is at the summit to try and promote better information sharing between policymakers and innovators. This is USA Radio News.
Would you wait several days for your cell phone to fully charge? Would you wait several days to feel the full effect of relief from your nasal congestion? Flonase Allergy Relief Nasal Spray could take that long. But if you're congested now and you want powerful relief now, use Afrin No Drip. Afrin starts working in seconds and keeps working for 12 hours. So why wait several days to feel the full effect when you can start to get relief in seconds with Afrin? Afrin, powerful congestion relief without the wait. Use as directed.
So what if someone owned your GM vehicle before you did? It may be pre-owned, but it's got the same stuff it came with, like OnStar. Yep, that service that sends help in a crash, runs diagnostic checks, and gives you roadside assistance. Just push the blue OnStar button and ask for 3 months on us, a free trial offer, good on any 06 or newer OnStar inactive GM model. If you don't want it after that, just say so. Visit OnStar.com for coverage map, offer details, and system limitations.
The House has voted on some expired tax breaks designed to help small business. The bill is part of a package of more than 50 temporary tax breaks that Congress routinely extends, but they expired at the start of the year.
We can do this, give our small business owners and farmers the type of certainty they need that will help our economy.